Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Sports and a Legend, along with my co-host, Macaulay Matthew. I'm, of course, William Ramo. What's up, Mac? What's going
hey,
on?
Hey, Will. How's it going?
Not much, man. Good to have you on the show, as always.
Yeah, good to be on, as usual.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you, as always, for coming on the show. Of course, I'm William Ramo. He's Macaulay Matthew, and welcome to Sports and a Legend. On today's show, we're going to be talking about Marcus Stroman returning back to New York, but this time as a member of your New York Yankees. We're also going to talk about, the other news in Hot Stove, the Mets signing Sean Manaea, and, what else is all the other rumors going on surrounding both teams in the Hot Stove. We'll also talk about the Knicks with their recent win against the Grizzlies. What else? Anything else that's basically going on in the world of sports, including, the Giants and Jets wrapping up their season and You know, the Jets whooping the Patriots behind, which turned out to be the last game of Bill Belichick's, you know, iconic career with the Patriots. And whatever else is on the going on the world of sports and entertainment. If you'd like to talk about any of these topics and more, we'd love to hear from you. And that number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. So again, feel free to let your voice be heard and call in, and don't be afraid to speak your mind here. This is the perfect place for you to do so. So with that said, yeah, let's start with the new Yankee starter, Marcus Stroman. And, you know, this seemingly unlikely deal, based upon the controversy surrounding Marcus Stroman with the Yankees. You know, Stroman years ago was, you know, criticizing the Yankees, you know, basically because they didn't go after him, you know, when he got traded to the Mets. And Brian Cashman, if I'm not mistaken, was saying, like, you know, he wasn't good enough to be, you know, a starter on the Yankees. And, you know, they had a little back and forth going on. And then, you know, Stroman, you know, would talk smack on the Mets, you know, implying that the team is racist for not re-signing him. And, you know, he would, you know, he played with the Cubs, had a, you know, he had, you know, a decent tenure with the Cubs. You know, he went to the, he was an all-star, I think, once or twice, maybe both years, if I'm not mistaken. Kind of fell off the second half of this past year. And, yeah, my question to you, do both teams, especially, does the Yankees, who you think seems more desperate? Or are they both desperate? Marcus Stroman or Brian Cashman, since they both had that little, you know, argument, which seemingly looked like, you know, Stroman would never put on the pinstripes. What do you think, Mac?
Who seems more desperate between the Yankees or Stroman?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Yankees, right now, they need starting pitching right now. I mean, you know, they lost Severino in the offseason. And right now, right behind Gerrit Cole, there's not much there other than, you know, you have Cortez, yes,
mm-hmm.
who can be solid when healthy. You have Carlos Rodon, mm-hmm. Who we got last year, but he didn't look good in his starts last year. So right now, I mean, you got a bona fide ace in Gerrit Cole. After that, it's a question mark with everyone else, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'd say the Yankees. Yankees are desperate for a starting pitcher right now. Yeah, mm-hmm. And getting this, getting Marcus Stroman right now is going to definitely help them if he pitches well. I mean, Stroman is a good pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
He had a good season last year with the Chicago Cubs. Started off great, then he tailed off a bit in the second half. Still ended up winning what 10 games for 3.95 ERA. So I think he can give us, you know, that he can be that second or third pitcher after Cole, you know. I think he'll give the starting pitching a bit of depth, because right now we need some depth in that starting pitching, because it's lacking right now. So as far as desperation, I would say the Yankees are desperate right now, and rightfully so. They need to improve their pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I mean, you know, of the two, Brian Cashman and the Yankees do seem more desperate with that, especially with the controversy with just a few years ago. Cashman said that, you know, Stroman wasn't good enough, you know, to be on the Yankee team, and now he signs him. Marcus Stroman, on the other hand, I mean, I mean, you could kind of sort of say he's kind of desperate because he's kind of controversial. He's very talented but controversial. But I don't really think of it desperation on his part because you know he apparently
it's money wise.
Yankee fan.
It's money wise. I mean, you go where the money is, and you know whatever beef you had, or past beef or whatever you want to call it, previously, you put that behind you, and everything's business going forward. We've seen it with a lot of different players and rivals, before in years past. So this is not any different. So I think Stroman will put that behind him, and I'm sure he's glad to be in the Yankee uniform. Probably something that he most likely wanted to be in his whole life.
And I agree with you. I mean, look at even more. Like you said, Yankees have signed a lot of players who have been rivals of the Yankees. Wade Boggs, Clemens, Johnny Damon. And even if you look at it, the WWE side, CM Punk. Who would have thought CM Punk would have returned? So Triple H used to say in the Authority, that's what's best for business. So
yeah.
I mean, I don't fault Stroman at all for signing, especially he apparently grew up a Yankee fan. So I mean, that's a win-win for him. And I think if Stroman can stay out of controversy, I think he and stay healthy. I think this could be a great move for the Yankees.
I think it's a good move for both sides.
Can just stay the course and not, have any major controversies, but even more importantly, perform under the bright lights as, we all expect Stroman to do, based on his, his talent and his ability as a ball player. So
I agree.
I think the Yankees is in catch, more than lightning in a bottle. I think it could be a great move for the Yankees.
I mean, Stroman, he's a guy that will give you 10 wins, and he'll give you a ERA of,
three
under fours, So I think that could be good. I don't see him as an ace. But he could be that second or third guy behind Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, and I think that's the perfect role for him. Behind Cole and Cortez, I think that'd be a great role for him. So like you're asking him to be the ace. He could blend in, and him as a number three starter.
Yeah.
With his heart, his competitive nature. He could win some series and tilt the any playoff series in your favor. He has that history of being ace with Toronto. So I mean, I think it's a smart gamble, for the Yankees. So and for Stroman himself, with the Yankees, they're always going to put a team that's going to try to compete for the title. So, I mean, and he's a local guy. I mean, to me, I think it's a good deal. As long as, Stroman, doesn't, do any, stays healthy and not do anything or say anything that's going to, make him stand out like a Sorkies because, Yankees have their way, how they want things done, I think it could be a great move. So,
I think it's a good move for both sides. I think Stroman will have a good year, and I think he'll help. He'll definitely help the Yankees pitching. I don't think the Yankees are done. There's rumors that they're still interested in Blake Snell, who's asking prices a little bit too high right now, but they may still go after him, so we'll see.
Yeah, funny how you talk about Blake Snell, because switching gears, the Mets are rumored to be going after Blake Snell too, and you know, he's a reigning Cy Young Award winner for the National League. You know, he's had a good career. But me as a Mets fan, I mean, I'm, you know, before this off season start, I'm like, you know, that should be one of the guys we should go after, you know, because of, you know, he's a 2-time Cy Young Award winner. You know, he has that potential to, you know, strike out 10 plus batters a game. But the problem with him is that he doesn't go over like what 150 innings per season. And, you know, he could be wild.
Yeah.
So, and like you just mentioned, the rumor is that he wants north of $200 million, which, I mean, he's the reigning Cy Young Award winner. So, I mean, that would make a lot of sense, but he's very erratic. I mean, he's kind of like a modern day, you know, AJ Burnett, you know, a guy who you're familiar with as well.
Here's the thing with Snell. His best two seasons have been the two seasons he's won the Cy Young.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, if you look at any other seasons, you're pretty much average almost.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only won 10 games twice, 10 games or more twice. So
mm-hmm.
I'd be hesitant to give him a huge contract, you know, because this guy, as you mentioned, he doesn't pitch many innings. He's only won 10 games or more 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Although those 2 times, again, you know, did give him the Cy Young. But other than that,
yeah.
I mean, to me, he's in the middle of the pack of very good started pitchers in baseball. You know, I think he can, he has these seasons where, you know, he'll be great, and then he'll have these seasons where he's average or subpar. You know, so I'd be very cautious about giving him a huge contract. I mean, $200 million, that's like ace money. I don't see Blake Snell as an ace, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem right there. I mean, the plus is that, you know, he's a 2-time Cy Young Award winner. He won it for both, you know, in both leagues. When he, you know, he won it with Tampa in 2018, and then of course last year with the Padres, he won it again. Yeah, but that's the tricky thing about him. It's like, you know, if you're good at, you know, starting pitching, and you can, like, you know, this would be like a reclamation project's, you know, dream. You know, like, this guy has so much talent. If you could get his head right, you know, he could and stay healthy, which is another thing. I mean, he could turn the corner, and that's weird saying that. I mean, he's career wise, he's 71-55 with a 3.20 ERA. He struck out over 1,000 with 1,223 strikeouts. Yeah, he's a 1-time All Star. You know, he's done a lot, you know, except for, you know, winning a championship, you know, staying healthy. I mean, for the most part, I mean, going deep into games. But yeah, I mean, the potential is there. Question is, can the Yankees or the Mets unlock his full potential? And
yeah.
And it's scary. Like, this guy could go another level. You know, he's an ace, yeah. I mean, you know, but he's like a modern day ace. You know, he doesn't go deep. You know what I mean? He's not a vintage ace where you can rely on him to go deep into games. Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, depending on the accent, yeah, you gotta kind of be leery. You gotta do your due diligence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, with Strowman, you know, Strowman's durable. He has that potential to, you know, dominate, which obviously Snow has that as well. But, yeah, man, if you're going to give a guy over $200 million, like even Yamamoto, a guy who, you know, who's never thrown a pitch, but all the potential showed that this guy, you know, was the next big thing. In Snell's credit, you know, he is a two-time Cy Young Award winner. He is a former All-Star. But, you know, yeah, giving him $200 million, and I think he's, what, 31 years old, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, this could be his last contract, potentially, or second-to-last contract that he gets in the big leagues. So, yeah, this is really – it's weird to say this is put up or shut up because he's had a great career, but, you know, he could take it to that next level if he's on a pitching staff that's really, you know, that could reclimate, you know, talented pitchers who have worser, a lot worser careers than he has, you know. So if he goes to like the Cardinals or the Braves or the Dodgers, you know, like a team like that who's, you know, known to save careers and of course launch the careers of a lot of young homegrown talent. Snell could be surprisingly even better than he is right now. Kind of like when Verlander went to Detroit and then of course later Houston, like take all that talent and put it to that next level. So yeah, Snell has if he can unlock his full potential, like there's actually literally could be another level to his greatness. But the question is, will the Yankees or the Mets, if he signs in New York, will they be able to unlock, you know, that potential? Because it's either he's a veteran, you know. His, you know, right now, it's kind of like when you think of R.J. Barrett with the Knicks, or when he was with the Knicks, you know, first year prospect, but if you don't see your potential, you become suspect. So, you know, Snell has had a great career, but he's had a very good career. But if he can, stay healthy, go deep into games, not be so wild, you know, on the mound, you know, he'll truly be an ace. But shifting gears to the Knicks, and before we talk about the Knicks, game, tonight with the Knicks dominating the Grizzlies, the Knicks former Knicks player Carmelo Anthony, he did not hold back about his thoughts on the former Knick RJ Barrett. Yeah, he basically called him, you know, said that he's a bland player. I'm trying to remember exactly how he said it. You know, he basically was, you know, saying that, RJ Barrett is overrated. What's your thoughts on what Melo said?
Well, I mean, I don't think he's wrong in what he said about RJ Barrett. I mean, RJ Barrett, to me, during his time here in New York, he had so much potential, but yet he was very inconsistent at times. And his game is a bit bland when you do watch him. You know, he needs to add more to his game, you know. Maybe he could add posting up a bit, shooting from the three. Definitely needs to improve his shooting from the outside. But no, I agree with Carmelo. You know, yeah, RJ Barrett's game is a bit bland, but I think he'll find that he'll improve his game while in Toronto now that, you know, he'll, you know, he won't have guys like Brunson and Randall to play second fiddle to. You know, now in Toronto, he'll be able to establish himself more. And, you know, we'll probably see a much more of a scoring threat in Toronto than we did when he was on the Knicks. You know, maybe we see his outside shooting improve. Maybe see him post up a bit more, you know, rather than slashing. You know, and also maybe his defense improves as well. So, you know, we'll see as a you know, as time goes on with his stay in Toronto, we'll see how he does. But Carmelo's, I think, was spot on with his assessment.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, I agree with Melo. But yeah, let me give you his actual quotes. He said, "This is what Melo said." He said, "He's just a bland player, bro. That's not a shot. That's not disrespect. I ask a lot of people who are Knicks fans to see what they saw, and it's like he's good. He gets it done sometimes, but he's not an exciting player. You don't know if he's gonna get 4 points or 26. Yeah, basically, he was doing an interview with Kid Merrill. In the interview, and basically he compared Barrett's performance with the Knicks to the new Nick who he got acquired for in exchange in with Toronto, OG Anunoby, and this is what Melo continued to say about that. OG is doing the same thing RJ is doing. He just doesn't demand it the way RJ demands to be part of the offense. Like, OG is cool sitting around on the wing and cutting and waiting for somebody to swing it to him and knock down a three. He still wants to play defense, no matter what, whereas RJ, he got to score 20. And, here's what else he's saying. About Barrett, he's like, you're scoring 20, 24, and that's as the third option on the team. So now you feel like I'm putting up 24, I'm the third option, I'm not really getting it. All right, man, I gotta go. And he was probably feeling like that, like, I'm ready to go. I'm sure he was questioning it. And, this is what Barrett said, after he got traded. He said, I helped build something in New York. When I came there, we weren't good. I left it a lot better than when I started. Definitely bittersweet, but I'm happy for those guys over there. They are happy about the trade that they made, and I wish nothing but the best for them. I grew up as a player and as a person over there in New York. Those 4.5 years I will never forget. And to further the statement, the Melo statement, Melo hit it around the head. I mean, on the surface it looks like, former player is bashing, former Nick on his way out, but what Melo said is 100% right. Like, and I was a huge supporter of Barrett. I still feel he has that potential to be an all-star if he can unlock that potential. But with the Knicks, like you said, as the third banana, not even the second fiddle, with the emergence of Brunson with the signing a few years ago. Yeah, he became the third option on the team. And, OG is giving us the same offensive capabilities that Barrett can do, except, Anunoby has that superior defense. Anunoby is pretty much the finished product of the potential that Barrett has, you know, as a player. You know, scoring-wise, playing defense.
Scoring-wise, you know, I still give that to RJ. Don't get me wrong. You know.
I agree with that. I mean, I agree. Yeah. Barrett has the potential, like I said, Barrett has the potential to be a star in this league. If he can, you know, just now that he's traded away and he's at home, which I mean sometimes depending on which place you get traded to, if that's your hometown team, there's going to be a lot of pressure playing in front of your family, in front of the home crowd, especially if you're like a Knicks player or playing in Philly or Boston or one of those major cities, pressure cooker cities in New York City, in America, I should say. But I think the pressure is going to be off him in Toronto, even though he's playing in you know, for his hometown team. But yeah, you know, he got baptized in New York. You know, the pressure cooker. You know, people, you know, talking smack about him, even on the team. I think Anthony Edwards was talking smack on him a few years ago when you know, Barrett missed the last second shot, and he was like, you know, nobody was afraid of him and all that stuff. Like, I'm like, you know, people rarely usually talk smack on another player's abilities. Like, you know what I mean? You keep that in-house. It's like he had no respect for him and his potential that he could, you know, he could have beat them with that last second shot, which they didn't that year. But yeah, he has the potential to really be a star in this league, as well as Quickly, which you know, recently wrote a letter thanking the Knicks fans for all, you know, the Knicks fans and the whatchamacallit, the, you know, the organization, you know, talking about how, you know, how he hugged, you know, his former teammates, the former coaches. He singled out Johnny Bryant, a guy who, you know, he was like a big brother to him. You know, obviously Randall, texting him, you know, after the trade and saying that, you know, wherever he goes, you know, he's always going to have his back. So, you know, quickly, you know, he out of the two, he's definitely more missed, you know, in the fan base because of that potential. Like he lived up to the potential that of what he could do. I mean, he just never really had a chance to start, you know. But I mean, you could clearly see he was built for New York, you know, the way how he played. So, I mean, all in all, I mean, it was a great move for both teams, and you know, so far, it's proving dividends for the Knicks that they had to make the move. So now talking about today's game, you know, Brunson, you know, he was hurt, you know, missed his you know, probably his first game, you know, during his Knick tenure. I mean, definitely the first one of the year, for sure, of this year. But yeah, the Knicks, they whooped the Grizzlies behind. They tamed the Grizzlies by the final score of 106-94. Miles McBride, you know, he had a career game.
Brunson didn't play.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, Brunson has Brunson, what injury did you say he had again?
I think it was like a contusion, a calf contusion. Let me see.
And how many games is he going to miss? More games?
I do not know. Let me try to find out right now as we speak. Let's see.
Hopefully it's not a long-term injury. You know, hopefully he just needs some several days or so to rest.
Yeah, that's what I would assume so too. I mean, but yeah, I assume it's not going to be serious, but you know, I'm going to have to find out more about that. But yeah, basically, what was I going to say? Yeah, McBride, he had a career game. He had 19 points. Julius Randle led the way for the Knicks with 24 points with 11 rebounds. OG had 18 points. Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, he had 12 points to I think tie his career high in rebounds with 20. DiVincenzo had 13 points. Josh Hart at 8. Yeah, so it was a balanced offense. Yeah, you had five players in double digits in scoring. Josh Hart almost was 2 points shy of joining them also. No, Flynn also had 9. So, I mean, it was a balanced attack. And, you know, they kept the opposition under 100, which, you know, you always love to see that. And the Knicks, they improved to 23-16. And, you know, they bounced back from that tough loss that they had against the Mavericks Brunson had his worst game of the year, you know, against his former team. And the Knicks, you know, they were getting blown out most of the game, and they cut it down to 1. Yeah, they were losing by, like, at least, 20 points at least. And they cut it down to 1. And within a minute, they had, you know, they missed, like, four defensive rebound opportunities, and as a result, you know, the Mavs was able to hit a 3 to put the lead up to 4 with 25 seconds left in the game, and that basically proved to be the game winner, and that snapped the Knicks. 3-game winning streak? Well, no, I think it was 5 at that point. And then, you know, obviously they bounced back. They bounced back on Saturday night and got the win. So the Knicks improved to 23-16, whereas the Grizzlies fell to 14-25 for the season. You know, go win for the Knicks.
Knicks are, you said they're 6-1, right?
Yeah, they're 6-1.
Yes, yeah, 6-1. The Obi trade. Not bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not bad. And defensively, they've been playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
They look. Although that Mavs game was not a good defensive effort by the Knicks. So.
Absolutely.
But so far with Obi, they've done pretty well.
Yeah, and here's the schedule coming up for this week. We're going to be hosting the Magic this afternoon at 3. Wednesday night, we're going to host the Rockets. Thursday night, we'll host the Wizards. And then Saturday, this is the game. You got to circle on your calendar, folks. January 20th, 7:30, you're going to have the return of R.J. Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, when the Toronto Raptors come back to the Garden, and it's going to be OG's first game against Toronto. So, yeah, get your popcorn ready, and yeah, man, that's a game on the calendar that before the season started you wouldn't have it circled, but after this blockbuster trade, you're definitely gonna have that that date circled on your calendar, because I'm pretty sure all the players involved in this trade definitely will. So
yeah, that's going to be a game to watch.
Mm-hmm. Must-see TV right there. So yeah, definitely. Oh, and the 23rd, to look a little bit ahead, we're going to be in Brooklyn against the Nets. The Thursday on the 25th, we host the defending world champions, Denver Nuggets. I mean, I'm still surprised to say that. You know, growing up, Denver Nuggets was always a laughing stock. But, you know, times have changed, and, you know, Nuggets are the defending world champions. And you just remind me of something. Carmelo Anthony was also mentioning another thing about, you know, his legacy with the Nuggets, because of course before Jokic you know, put on number 15, Carmelo was, you know, like arguably one of the greatest, if not the greatest Nugget player you know, of all time, and not to mention he wore number 15. And Carmelo, you know, thinks the Nuggets had an ulterior motive giving Jokic his number. And here's what he said. He said, it was a petty maneuver. It wasn't like, oh, we've got numbers to choose from. It was like, here, we've got 15. And y'all put Jokic in the middle of that. He doesn't know what is going on. He could have been like, I want to wear 15. He could have been like, 15 is here. I can wear 15. That's Melo number. He could have worn it because he wanted to pay homage. But what I believe is that they gave him 15 to try to erase what I did. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think he's 100% right. Because they could have gave Jokic another number. I mean, number 15 should be retired, you know, with Denver. I mean, this guy, he had a lot of you know, first round exits. I mean, I think the highest he ever did was, I think, took them to the Western Conference Finals. You know, before they lost to the Lakers that year in 2009. You know, he spent his first 7.5 years with Denver, you know, before he got, you know, traded to the Knicks. And that blockbuster, you know, move. Yeah, but for me, I think, and, you know, to be honest with you, yeah, I think they could have gave him another number, or at least the least the Nuggets should do is retire it twice, retire 15 for him, and let Jokic, you know, since he's grandfathered in, and then when Jokic retires, you know, they retire it again, you know. I think that's what they should do. What do you think, Mac?
I think it was a sign of disrespect. I mean, Carmelo is one of your franchise's best players. You know, future Hall of Famer, and you disrespect him like that by giving another player his number. I mean, his number should be retired in Nuggets history for what he does, mm-hmm. for what he's done for that organization. So now you have Jokic, who is looking like he's a Hall of Famer as well. Mm-hmm. So are you going to retire both of their numbers as Nuggets? And they share the same number, so how is that going to work?
I would do it. If I was, yeah. First of all, if I was the Nuggets, I would have never gave Jokic Melo's number in the first place. The only way they can make it right is that they have to retire it twice.
Just like the Knicks did
with Barnett and Frazier.
Yeah.
You know, you got to retire the number twice. You know,
yeah, that's what you're gonna have to do.
And had they did the right thing and not gave Melo's number, we wouldn't have this conversation. You know, it would have.
Yeah.
You know, but That's the only way they could make the situation right. They gotta retire it twice.
Yeah, which is most likely gonna happen. So, but yeah, no, they should have. They shouldn't have given him his number.
Mm-hmm. For real. No doubt about that. Like, you've seen so many players, you know, like they wear the number and they give them some scrubby players. Like, you know, before the Mets, you know, started retiring numbers, you know, more numbers under, you know, the coins era right now. Yeah, the only players, that, you know, that they had retired was like Piazza and Seaver, you know, 41 and 31. And then, of course, they had, what was I going to say? They had Casey Stengel's number, you know, even though it's, you know, 37, even though he was a manager, you know. And obviously most of his success is, you know, with your boys, the Yankees. But, yeah, other than that, during the Wilpon era, there wasn't a lot of retired numbers. But now under Cohen, you know, the players are starting to get their, you know, their respect. You know, that they revamped the Hall of Fame, the Mets Hall of Fame. You're starting to see more people, deserving people, go into the Mets Hall of Fame. And they're retiring numbers. Keith Hernandez, Darryl and Doc are going to get retired this year. But the thing is, with that is, you know, before these numbers, these deserving numbers was retired, you'd have, you know, all these players wear the numbers, and it's like, man, you know, why is Dae-Sung Koo wearing, Keith Hernandez's number, and, you know, all these other, you know, journeyman players or you know, people who don't have that, you know, resume as a Met or in their careers are wearing these iconic players' numbers because they're not, the numbers are, the jersey numbers haven't been retired until most recently. So I think it's the only way the Nuggets can rectify this situation is by, like I said, retiring number 15 twice. So what number is, you know, that from your teams, I would say, especially the Yankees, but, you know, any team you look for that, you know, a number that should be deservedly retired, but the number hasn't been retired, and they just, you see the most, like, bummiest player wearing a number. It's like, why is this player wearing this number, you know, number when, you know, this former great player put that number on the map and it should have been retired? What players come out in your mind?
Wow, I have to think about that, man.
Anybody on the Yankee?
That's I have to think about that. That's a, mm-hmm. this is a trivia question. I have to think about it. Can you think of anyone on the Mets right now, currently?
Oh. Well, yeah.
I'm clueless on the Yankees right now.
Well, yeah, like I said, you know, before Keith Hernandez's number was...
I'm talking about currently.
Currently on the Mets? Okay. On the Mets right now?
It's a tricky question.
Because normally, you know, I would say, like, you know, obviously the, you know, the... you know, like I said, the, you know, Keith Hernandez, Darryl, Doc, those numbers are, you know, are Keith's number is retired now, and Darryl and Doc's are going to be retired in separate ceremonies this upcoming year. But yeah, you know, other numbers that should be retired would be, you know, David, which I don't think anybody's ever worn number 5 ever since he retired. So, I mean, that's good there. Reyes would be another person as well, but then again, you had, Crample had that number. I mean, Crample was a long time Met, longest tenure Met, you know, so So yeah, they could have retired the number then also. Speaking of, you know, all-time legendary Mets, Bud Harrelson.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, man, rest in peace, Bud Harrelson. You know, this guy was a Met through and through, man. That's a guy who should have every, you know, number and every accolade, you know, retired by the Mets. I mean, this guy was a great player with the Mets. He, you know, he started his career with the Mets in 65. And, you know, he played with the Mets all the way until he got traded in 78, you know, in the dark era of New York Mets history. You know, what can you not say about this guy? This guy was, you know, like, you know, the Pete Rose of the Mets. You know, he played hard, you know, he always hustled, you know, he didn't take crap from anybody, including Pete Rose. And, you know, and that was evident in the 73 National League championship, where Bud Harrelson, you know, helped the Mets beat you know, the Big Red Machine before the Big Red Machine, you know, would end up winning titles in 75-76 against you know, the Red Sox and the Yankees, you know. So I mean, what was I gonna say?
Yeah, we were watching the YouTube footage last night at Chili's.
Oh yeah, right, exactly. And that whole controversy started was because you know, Bud Harrelson, you know, he, as great as he was defensively, you know, he wasn't great offensively, and basically he was doing a joke about how the Reds offense, you know, because of the Mets pitching, they look like him at the plate. And, you know, Pete Rose and other players on the Reds took offense to that. So there was, a double play ball. And basically, you know, this happened because the John Matlack, who had a great year with the Mets that year, I think he won the Cy Young, and I think Rookie of the Year that year. He held the Cincinnati Reds to two hits in a 5-0 complete game in Cincinnati. So after the game, Bud Harrelson was saying that he made the Big Red Machine look like me hitting today. So obviously they were upset, and you know, they had Hall of Fame players on that team. You know, they had Pete Rose, Joe Morgan. I mean, the list goes on and on. You know, and you know, Pete Rose, obviously the hits king and the batting title champion of that year. In the fifth inning, Morgan hit a double play to the first baseman John Milner, and you know, Rose, when he collided to second base, you know, I think Pete Rose was saying something to him, you know, in the collision, and then they fought, even though, and he fought Pete Rose, even though Pete Rose is at least 50 pounds, you know, bigger than he was, you know. But he didn't take crap from anybody. So, and the funny thing is, like, they're both similar players. So, you know, it's pretty understandable that that, you know, that they butted heads in that moment. But it was crazy. The Mets fans were, you know, very PO'd about, you know, having their hero, Bud Harrelson, which even Gary Cohn himself said that was his, you know, the longtime Met announcer said that, you know, that was his hero growing up. What was I going to say? Even Mike Breen, the Knicks announcer, said that was his hero growing up as well, you know. Because to Mike Breen, there was two heroes he had back in those days. He had Bud Harrelson and, of course, you know, Walt Clyde Frazier, his broadcasting partner for over 20 years, you know. So, yeah, Bud Harrelson was living proof that, you know, he was the antithesis of, you know, never meeting your heroes because, you know, they'll disappoint you. This guy literally lived up to the hype, you know. I mean, this guy was a Met through and through. I mean, he exemplified what it meant to be a Met, you know, having that never-say-die attitude, you know, giving it your all, playing defense, you know, just carrying the grit of the city on his shoulders, man. He helped the Mets win the World Series in 69. He helped the Mets go, you know, they end up winning that series. And like I was saying, the Mets fans were so upset about what happened that that basically they had to the Sparky Anderson, the Reds manager, had to take take his players off the field because the fans were really PO'd about what happened. Literally, it was such a chaotic situation that Yogi Berra, Willie Mays, Tom Seaver, Cleon Jones, Rusty Staub, they all went onto the field, went out to left field to calm down the fans because the fans were really upset. You know, the umpires were thinking about postponing or canceling the game or something like that. Like, it got really crazy. He was, a 2-time All-Star in 70. In 71, he started in the All-Star game. Gold Glover in 71. A Met Hall of Famer, as you would expect. And, he's sorely going to be missed. After he got traded to the Phillies, he helped the Phillies win their first championship in 1980. Where Pete Rose was his teammate, and, you know, they apparently buried the hatchet, you know. So, and another thing I just remembered. After the incident with the fight, could have been in the same offseason, if I'm not mistaken. Basically, Pete Rose was handed the Humanitarian of the Year Award, and who handed it to him? Bud Harrelson, you know. And basically he said that, you know, he broke Pete Rose's hand with his eye, you know. So, you know, he showed his he had, you know, a great sense of humor, and his legacy and the man he was will live on forever. Another thing I just remembered, he's the only player in Met history to be in uniform in both of the Mets World Series. Obviously, he was the starting shortstop in the 69 team, and then he was the third base coach of the 86 Met team. And then on the other side, so he was the only Met player history to be in uniform for both teams. But, however, David Johnson, the 86 Met coach, was present in both Mets World Series, except obviously in 86 he was the manager, but in 69 he was the last out for the Baltimore Orioles when the Mets won their first World Series. So Davey Johnson was the other person that was around, you know, in uniform, not in the Met uniform, but you get the idea. But yeah. In any case, rest in peace, Bud Harrelson. You know, he would later replaced Davey Johnson as the Knicks manager in 1990. And then they would fire him the following year in 91, even though he had a winning record collectively with the, as a, you know, as a manager in those 2 years. And then he would later create the Long Island Ducks, be a part owner, I think manager as well. And he literally said that owning the Long Island Ducks and being part of the Long Island Ducks was the best part of his career. And that's saying something. I mean, you won a World Series with the Mets. You've even won a World Series with the Phillies. You've been played in All-Star games, won Gold Gloves. I mean, he done it all, but you know, he just loved being, you know, a part of, you know, his hometown and you know, bringing baseball over to there. But you know, what he did with the Mets will never be forgotten, you know. You know, rest in peace, Bud Harrelson. And I mean, even though I wasn't born when you were you know, playing, and especially in a Met uniform, for sure. You know, thank you for the memories on from you know, the videos, the vintage stuff that you did. It will live on forever. So you know, rest in peace, Bud Harrelson. And thank you. That's all I can say, man. Anything you'd like to say before you know, we head out?
Oh, by the way, the NFL playoffs are going on this weekend. Browns got blown out by the Texans, and Chiefs won today against the Dolphins. So two games in the books of the playoffs, and I want to see that Cowboys Packers game. I think that's going to be a good game. But you have some very good games during this playoff weekend for NFL. So hope you guys check those games out.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And good point. So you know, the Jets they beat Bill Belichick in his final game as the New England Patriots head coach. They beat the Patriots, final score 17-3. The Jets improved to 7-10. And the New England Patriots, under Bill Belichick's final year as the Patriots head coach, they finished 4-13. And an end of an era. I mean, he's been on that team for like, nearly 25 years or so.
Yeah.
Since he quit on the Jets twice. I mean, he was. He was a paper Jet head coach that never coached a game. So now they have the Patriots have a new head coach, and he's the first black head coach in New England Patriots history. And he's no stranger to the people in New England, because he's a longtime former player, and that's Jared Mayo. The players were basically felt he was groomed for that role, you know. One of the greatest defensive players that they had in their history. Played like 8 years for them. And as a result, Bill Belichick, he leaves the Patriots. They quote-unquote mutually part ways, you know, after 24 years and 6 Super Bowls. And it's the end of an era for the Patriots. And prior to Jerod Mayo being signed, they were thinking about they were thinking of hiring Mike Vrabel as a head coach after he got recently fired. They decided to give Mayo a shot instead of the former Tennessee Titans head coach and former Patriot player, great Patriot player as well, and Hall of Famer as well. End of an era. What's your thoughts on Bill Belichick leaving New England?
Yeah, I mean, it's end of an era. I mean, he's one of the greatest coaches in NFL history by far, with the success there in New England. And, you know, that dynasty that he built with Tom Brady. I mean, that's I'm very surprised that it's coming to an end this way. You know, feels like the Patriots actually wanted to part ways with him rather than him wanting to part ways with them. You know, I guess they felt it was time to make a change. You know, the last several seasons since Tom Brady has left, they haven't, you know, really been that good. So, you know, Patriots felt like they needed to make a change and go in another direction as far as head coaching. And I'm sure Belichick, you know, he's one of the most successful coaches in the NFL history. I'm sure he'll be able to find another job here, and maybe even, who knows, with one of these New York teams. As a New York fan, I mean, I would love Belichick to coach the Giants if the opportunity arised. You know, he did a great job as the defensive coach with us back in the day when we won those two Super Bowls. So I would love for him to come back to the Giants if the opportunity presented itself. But, you know, we'll see what the future holds with Bill Belichick. I mean, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. I don't know if the Patriots will ever have it. We'll see how this new coach does. You know, hopefully he'll have some success with this team going forward. But, yeah, it's definitely an end of an era in New England. Don't think you will see a dynasty like that ever again in NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I read somewhere that Belichick told Robert Kraft, the owner, that he doesn't think that they'll is ever going to do anything. Tom Brady. That Tom Brady is going to, you know, do anything when he left, before he won the title with the Buccaneers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he felt he was done.
Yeah.
And, of course, Tom Brady proved otherwise, bringing the title to the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, an end of an era for Boston. I mean, that's the end for Belichick. Yeah, I mean, I could see him going to the Giants if they fire Vrabel, but the Jets, I don't see that at all. You know, obviously they're gonna stick with Saleh and try to, you know, see if Rodgers can stay healthy and try to produce what they felt that they were going to do, which is, you know, be a Super Bowl contending team with, with the roster, you know, a healthy Aaron Rodgers potentially next year. But speaking of the Giants, they beat their rival Eagles in the last game of the season, 27-10. And, not the Giants. The Giants improved to 6-11, and of course, you know, the potent Eagles, you know, finished the season 11-6.
Yeah, that was a good win for the Giants, probably the best one of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that they were able to finish out strong and beat those Dirty Birds.
Mm-hmm.
But now they head into the off season. They have to improve this team. They have to get some. They have some draft picks that they could use to improve the offensive line, improve, get some depth, improve depth in the wide receiver core. They got a lot to do here in the offseason as far as improving this team. And it looks like we might even lose Saquon Barkley. So I say Saquon Barkley might part ways with the Giants. So we'll see. If that does happen, I think that's going to be a big hole left at the running back position if he does if he does leave the Giants.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Another thing. Oh yeah, Mets announced the signing of Sean Manaea. He was a former Oakland A's pitcher. He was part of that newer version of the Big Three with Bassett, Manaea, and Montas, the brief Yankee of last year. He had a kind of like an up and down year last year. He started off rough last year. He was bounced around the starting rotation and the bullpen. But I think he added a pitch to his repertoire, and he started to pitch a lot better, towards the end of the year. So, if he can continue, what he did with the improvement he did with the sweeper, that could be that could have like a Stroman like impact that I think. Stroman will have with you guys, with us, But he'll be, the second starter or so. But, with him and Severino, could be that, the two veteran guys, reclamation project type of guys, that you pair with Senga. Senga's phenomenal rookie year. And let's see if the Mets will improve the starting rotation even further. But we shall see in time. I think that's about it. I think I covered everything. Oh yeah. On Raw, they had that. R-Truth had that funny Judgment Day moment video about about his relationship with the Judgment Day. A much watch if you haven't seen it, folks.
Yeah, hilarious.
Yeah, man, R-Truth, man, this guy. I mean, if you can make Brock Lesnar laugh on live TV, I mean that's all I need to tell you about how funny this guy is.
Yeah, this is similar to Sami Zayn when he joined the
New Day,
bloodline.
Right? Bloodline.
But
the New Day.
This is more hilarious because R-Truth is actually not in the group. At least Sami
exactly.
Zayn was part of Bloodline for a while.
Right.
But R-Truth is actually not in the group, and he thinks he is. So
yeah, because technically he did win that match. So
yeah, technically, well, it was whoever. I mean, but he was never in the group to begin with. So
right.
It really didn't even count anyway. But
JD McDonald.
Yeah, it's hilarious. R-Truth is definitely a treasure, man.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, this dude calls John Cena his childhood hero, and he's older than John Cena. Yeah, and just don't get that guy near ladders and spiders. So he should be fine. But yeah, anything you'd like to say before we head out?
Everyone have a good weekend, and check out my show iMac. Check your local listings for that, and come back here to check out Sports Urban Legend every Saturday at 11, only here at Block Talk Radio.
You're the guy. Check out his show iMac. Check your local listing and come back next week. Check out Sports Urban Legend, where we will preview the Royal Rumble. So stay tuned for that and everything else that's going on in the world of sports. Hopefully the Mets and Knicks will make some moves, to improve the team. But, in any case, we'll let you know. He's McCauley Matthew. I'm William Lemo, and I'll see you guys next week. Peace.